Good afternoon, Eastern Washington. This is Matt Shea, and welcome to Patriot Radio broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley, and once again brought to you by the committee to elect Matt Shea, Republican, in the legacy of Dr. Stan Monteith, bringing you the story behind the story and the news behind the news. And once again, this is the year that we make freedom a reality, because our hope is not in man, but in Jesus Christ. And we can't end in prayer. We must also move to action. And as Jeremiah 6:16 reminds us, stand at the crossroads and look, ask for the ancient paths, ask where the good way is and walk in it, and you will find rest for your souls. And I think we all need a little bit of rest with all the chaos that is going on right now. And it's just, folks, I don't know about you, but it just seems like it's getting worse and worse and worse. Now, I'm not looking for it, but my goodness, it just seems like things are just continuing to spiral downward. I think there's something said about that in Scripture. Which brings us to the international front and your daily intelligence briefing. Venezuela, once again, and this word was actually used in the New York Times, quote, Venezuela is in collapse, end quote. Widespread food shortages, rationing of water and electricity, government coming into buildings, no warrants, nothing, and just killing people that they believe are protesters, civil unrest, and Venezuela has run out of money to print money. They literally can't buy the supplies to print money. Now, this was the great experiment in socialism, and there were a bunch of people from Hollywood who hailed Venezuela as a great country. And the former dictator Hugo Chavez is a great leader. They went down there. They visited with him. And socialism once again collapsed. Now, I have to say, there's a great lesson here, because when you watch how fast socialism can literally lead to chaos and anarchy and the destruction of so many lives, why would anyone with a track record of national socialists in Germany, socialists, really communists in Russia, Cambodia, China, where it led to the deaths of millions of people and the untold suffering of those that lived, why would anyone want to attach themselves to that failed worldview? Or worse, say, oh, it's just because we didn't do it right. And we're Americans, we're going to do it right this time. And my name is Bernie Sanders. My goodness gracious, really? You really advocate, we need to hold these folks accountable. You really advocate the death of millions of people, because that literally is the philosophy, that is the worldview that led to it. And it is now once again collapsing in Venezuela. This isn't a game. This isn't some place where you can live outside of reality. And we kind of have a new theme when liberals meet reality. And that's what's happening in Venezuela right now. And to the horrible detriment of many good Christian folks down there and people who had nothing to do with this and actually tried to fight it. And we need to do everything we can to make sure that it does not happen here. Also on the international front, the Bilderbergers meeting in Germany. Now, it's interesting that they try to keep this quiet. Mainstream media won't report on it, except for some alternative media sources like Drudge Report, Alex Jones, they'll report about this. But they're meeting in Dresden, Germany. And there's some interesting names on the list. Peggy Noonan, who is supposed to be a conservative columnist, Lindsey Graham, meeting at the Bilderberg super secret, ultra elite planning session. Now, this isn't conspiracy theory. Anybody that tells you it is lying to your face, because this has been tracked and very well documented for years that these guys have been meeting clandestinely, been meeting under this vast cloak of secrecy. And we in America don't believe in oligarchs and don't believe in oligarchies. We believe in a republic, in a republican form of government. And yet that is exactly what the Bilderberg meeting is. There are people that are attending that from the United States, elected officials, who are meeting as part of this oligarchy. And I think that's unconstitutional, actually, under several ideas. But I digress there a little bit. The fact of the matter is that this is not government of the people, by the people, and for the people. This is a bunch of oligarchs getting together and figuring out what's best for you and me. And interestingly enough, Lindsey Graham, hardcore anti-Trump person, is there, and they are going to be discussing how to stop Trump. But it's not about Trump. It's about what this election ultimately comes down to, and that is nationalism versus globalism. That is what this election is about. And they do not want nationalism. They do not want a strong America, a restored, God-honoring constitutional republic here in America. They do not want that. That is the greatest obstacle to total control by these people. And so if you don't believe this exists, go read about it. Don't just go, oh, it's just more. Go read about it. Figure it out. Read about it. And there's a great book called Tragedy and Hope by Carol Quigley. Now, Carol is actually a man, was a mentor of Bill Clinton's, and he actually wrote the history of these characters that have been meeting in secret and forming these groups. And it is unequivocal that the history is true, that they want total control of the world's economy, total control ceded to them as far as sovereignty from individual nations is concerned. It's real, it exists, and it's in writing. In fact, I think it's like a 1,200-page book. Anyway, around about page 900, start reading from there, and you really get a great summary of the plan. Which brings us to the next thing on the international front, reported on WorldNet Daily, and this is bizarre. We're seeing more of this bizarreness occur, but there was the world's longest and deepest rail tunnel. It's 35 miles underneath the Alps, okay? And 35 miles long through the Alps, but the deepest underground too. Not 35 miles, obviously. But they opened this tunnel, and at Goddard Base Tunnel, they opened this tunnel and they have this ceremony there, and WorldNet Daily has all of the pictures and video from it. It is bizarre. It is a satanic opening ceremony for this tunnel, 35 miles long underneath the Alps, fresh with a goat man, people prostrating themselves to this goat man, simulated sex, and just weird. And I got to tell you that this kind of demonic presence that is out there right now, that is being put out there, this occult presence is being put out into the world right now. It's really everywhere. And if you aren't aware of it, you're not supposed to be looking for it around every corner, but just recognize it for what it is. And there's a couple great books by Frank Peretti that I've read that talk about spiritual warfare. And that's ultimately what we're talking about, is spiritual warfare. And this is just a physical manifestation of this. So just a bizarre, and it probably would never have made the light of day but for this reporter at WorldNet Daily. And I just invite you to at least check it out, that this stuff is real and it's happening, and it's being sanctioned apparently by governments to open tunnels as well. Bizarre. Which moves us to the national front, and talking about bizarre, tonight in California, Bernie Sanders versus Hillary Clinton is going to, I'll see if we get any results, and I'll announce them during the show. But Looks like Bernie Sanders may actually beat Hillary Clinton in California, and they're terrified of that. The Democrat Party is in disarray, total disarray right now. And we're seeing it all over the country. And I'll get to a couple things here in a minute that some of you will probably find kind of amusing. Also on the national front, public land transfer. Donald Trump finally came out and said, listen, I will transfer lands back to the states and pardon the political prisoners. If he is true with that, that is a very good step forward. But the fact of the matter remains that in the bureaucracy in the federal government, including the BLM, remain these people that believe in federal supremacy. The idea that the federal government controls the states are an agent of the federal government, even though that is the farthest thing from the truth. The states, actually, were the principle that formed the federal government with very few and defined powers to do what states couldn't do individually. Protect from outward threats, manage disputes among the states, ensure commerce that's crossing state lines can do so in an orderly and fair manner. And when I say fair, don't read too much into what I'm saying there. It's just the fact that one state couldn't put up a trade boycott against another one. But the fact is that the government, the federal government, is an agent of the states and not the other way around. And yet we have these federal supremacists in these bureaucracies that believe that, and we really got to deal with it. Also on the national front, out of the Mojave Desert, at the National Training Center down in California, a place that I've been myself a couple of times, they're testing some mysterious military device down there and have warned residents of GPS outages as a result of these testings they're going to be conducting over the summer on the West Coast. So obviously the military has something that can jam signals between satellites, and they'll be testing that out down in California. If there's anybody here with relatives down there in California that knows about this, please message me on Facebook and let me know if they can report anything that occurs down there out of the normal as far as their GPS or phones or anything are concerned as these tests begin here shortly over the summer. Also on the national front, Hillary Clinton still not in jail, even though her emails were found by two inspectors general and a new report to have been sent illegally with classified information. Still not in jail, not even looks like she's going to get prosecuted. And 75% of Democrats would still ask her to run, even though she were indicted, which is an indictment on the Democrat Party. Also on the national front, an ACLU director, and this is one of the most interesting stories of the week, an ACLU director quits after her daughters had an ordeal and were frightened by several transgendered men who came into the ladies' room when they were using it at the time. Liberals meeting reality right there, folks. So the ACLU director quits because she can't go along with the agenda any longer because it threatened her own daughters. Just like we predicted here on Patriot Radio that this would start happening. And yet there's still a debate about it. Gracious. Also, on the national front, a secret bit of text slipped into a Senate bill would give the FBI warrantless access to email. We're going to be monitoring this as it goes forward. But once again, destruction of the Fourth Amendment, where I don't know how they get around the word effects, because it really is about effects. We should be free from government intrusion in our personal effects, unreasonable searches in our personal effects. We have a right of privacy here in the state of Washington as well. Moving on to the regional front, the recall of Judge Grasty. Now, remember, Judge is like a head county commissioner, not real judge like we think of it, down in Harney County. Moves forward and is validated, and Godspeed to the folks down there in Harney County. Judge Grasty needs to go. That corruption needs to be rooted out. A man who lied to several state legislators down there that no use of force would occur in Harney County, and yet a man ended up dead because that's exactly what they did, and did it very apparently against the law. Also on the regional front, God and Country Celebration coming up here at the end of June, June 24 through 26 in Marble, Washington. Please make sure to check that out online, Marble Country. And it's the biggest meeting and networking of like-minded patriots, conservatives, constitutionalists of the year. Look forward to seeing you all there. Also on the regional front, the Bureau of Land Management forms a new security and intelligence post for Dan Love, who is the person that oversaw the failed attempt to take the Bundy cattle here several years ago. And some people were saying, oh, it's just not true, it's not happening. So I posted the article from the Las Vegas Review, and then people came back and said, Matt, that's not accurate. There's no division being formed. It's just this intelligence post. Look, folks, anytime a bureaucracy creates a post and puts a guy in charge of it, they have to give him staff, they have to give him agents, they have to give him money and equipment. So it's ridiculous to say, oh, it's not going to turn into a separate post. If they created this position in the BLM, Security and Intelligence, which, by the way, I believe is unconstitutional, they are going to use it as another arm of that bureaucracy. I've seen it happen over and over again. And not to mention the fact that it seems like every federal agency now is going to suddenly have a new security and intelligence SWAT arm of it, which effectively renders moot posse comitatus, which prevents the use of U.S. military on U.S. soil for law enforcement purposes, because each one of these is going to have this militarized force. Even though, by the way, federal statute demands that the BLM defer to local law enforcement for enforcement actions to the greatest extent possible, and I've read that on the show before. So this is really a frightening new trend. Now BLM with this new security and intelligence post. Have that up online right now, and you can check it out, read it for yourself. Also, on the regional front, kindergartners being taught gender expression in Washington State by 2017. Folks, I've got to tell you something. This is the last straw. I am advocating every single person listening to this radio show today to pull your kids from government schools, period. I love the teachers that are out there. My cousin is one. They're doing a phenomenal job. They've been put in an untenable position, but that's enough. We cannot countenance sending our kids to a school where they're going to be put in direct physical danger, mental health danger, with this ridiculous transgender push that's going on right now. Folks, I am unequivocally saying that you should pull your kids from government schools. And I want to deal with something. Somebody brought this up. Well, we need to be salt and light. Folks, our kids have not been trained up to be missionaries yet. Yes, the Lord can work through them. Yes, the Lord does work through them. But they've not been trained up to be missionaries and to withstand the onslaught of indoctrination that is going on right now, especially on this transgender issue. And the statistics bear it out that less than 5% stay with the faith that are going through public school right now. And in private schools, the number is almost opposite. So we need to take a look at, are we actually enabling our kids to have their worldview dramatically crushed and changed? Now, there's some folks listening right now say, well, I can't, Matt. We work full time. There's no way we can afford to homeschool or go to private school. There's just no way we can send our kids that. There is a way to homeschool even though you work full time. And if you want to know how, there are many people, especially on my Facebook page, that will be more than happy to help you and show you how to do it. But right now, with public schools doing this, I cannot in any good conscience say that kids should remain in government schools. And on the local front, to close it out, my opponent in this election, an avowed socialist Bernie Sanders supporter, filed his PDC finally, his C1 report, and the name of his political committee is Friends of the Revolution, quote unquote. This is a socialist, and that has a very specific meaning for socialists, and that means violent overthrow of the government. And I wonder if the SPLC is going to be visiting him anytime soon. And last but not least, on the local front, this weekend, June 11th, is the Answering Islam Conference downtown. There's a lot of things on Facebook about that. I think you can also, I think there's also an event on the Truth in Love website. You can visit that, check it out, and join us for the Answering Islam Conference this weekend, June 11th. And that's the briefing. Remember, the antidote to dependency and socialism is to be a God-fearing, self-reliant, freedom-loving American. Thank you to everybody that has been supporting the show. And remember, this is listener-supported, so please go to Facebook/Patriot Radio, like the page, share it with your friends and family, and then, if you feel led, you can donate to the campaign. Go to VoteShay.com, and that helps keep us on the air, keep the truth coming out, despite what the mainstream media does to stop us. And that brings me to my guest today, who has been on the front lines fighting the battle for freedom and liberty. Brad Dacus from the Pacific Justice Institute. Thank you very much for joining me on Patriot Radio today. It's always a pleasure to have you on, and you guys are doing some great work.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be on your show. I really appreciate what you do.
Well, so let's start a little bit. What should we're talking about this whole transgender issue. Now they're going to make it mandatory curriculum for kindergartners in Washington State. Where does this stop, Brad? I mean, this is just unbelievable we're even having to talk about this, but where does this stop?
I don't see any stopping in it, but a continued expansion, attempt to expand the civil rights to include all kinds of expansions in terms of sexuality, sexual identification, and lifestyles. I hate to sound doom and gloom on this, but that's why we can't ever have an attitude of, well, this will be okay because it'll stop here. It won't, and that's why we have to address it. When we saw the President of the United States, his administration, come forward with an edict, a mandate against every single public school in the United States, saying that they have to let boys go into girls' locker rooms and shower and be naked with girls, whether they like it or not, because of gender identity dysphoria, mental condition, not a physical condition, a mental condition. We know that things are really moving at a very fast pace and a very terrible way for our country.
Well, you know, I did a little bit earlier, and I don't know if you caught it or not, but when liberals meet reality, you know, you had this ACLU director resign because her daughters got frightened because some transgender men came into the restroom when they were using it. I mean, this is we said this was going to happen, and here it is happening, not just there with this ACLU director, but also over in the Seattle area as well.
Yeah, I have real respect for people who do that, who are true to themselves and realize that groups like the ACLU are ones that, if you're really for a true civil liberties advocate, you can't be a part of something like the ACLU anymore, and support the idea of girls being visually violated as a matter of law by boys. I mean, it is totally disrespectful of civil rights in one of the greatest ways possible. And yet that's the agenda of the ACLU. That's why we at the Pacific Justice Institute are aggressively litigating it as we speak in the state of California, trying to get on an initiative on the ballot that will allow the voters to repeal the state mandate that was by state law passed 3 years ago.
Well, here in Washington, we had RCW 28A640020, which specifically says that school bathrooms must be segregated according to male and female to avoid any violence toward women. It actually says it in the statute, and yet they passed this rule on December 26th, the day after Christmas, without posting it online like they're supposed to according to the Administrative Procedures Act, and continue to move forward. How can we fight this in Washington State, and where do you think people should be spending their energy to help stop it here in Washington?
Yeah, well, I can tell you that one thing for sure is the need to for school districts who want to challenge it to speak up. We have Pacific Justice who will to challenge and represent school districts wishing to change this federal unconstitutional federal mandate, twisting of the language of Title IX, redefining the word sex, and that it's been used for decades now with the stroke of a pen. But also, if there's any situations and cases where a school district is implementing this policy and there is a transgender in that school and there's a girl whose parents acknowledge that their daughter feels very uneasy and anxious and with the idea that any moment a boy could just suddenly come into her locker room and see her naked and drying off the shower, then they should contact us at Pacific Justice because we're looking for school districts and particularly parents in those situations who wish to challenge this, and we're willing to do so without charge, as always.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up. There have been a lot of people that have put out your notification for reasonable expectation of privacy to the school districts, and one of them in West Valley School District, right here in my own district, actually rejected the notice, as if you can do that, but rejected the notice and said that there is no reasonable expectation of privacy anymore, and said that, and actually they connected with your organization as well.
Yeah, and they may say that, and they may believe it, but they're wrong. The Supreme Court has recognized privacy, and it's very established through case law. And I can't think of a more egregious violation of privacy than to have to be naked in front of the opposite sex, particularly when you're in adolescence, one of the sensitive times of your body changing and mentally, emotionally, very fragile in this regard. I can't think of a greater violation of privacy than that. So I think that the verdict is at the very least still out on this, and it's one that we at the Pacific Justice Institute intend to litigate and to challenge and until we have a final resolve, ideally before the United States Supreme Court.
Do you think that they're going to stop? I mean, let's say that the Supreme Court comes out with a ruling that's favorable to us. Do you think they'll really stop there, or do you think we'll continue to see these agencies passing rules in the dead of night like they did here in Washington, you know, December 26th, you know, failing to post online any notification to anybody so there could be meaningful comment? Do you think we're going to continue to see that? And what do you think citizens can do to stop that type of it's heavy-handedness. Let's just be frank.
Yeah, a lot of it, I think, is education. And let me just say this. Many people who are very ignorant about what transgenderism is. You know, first, it's a mental condition. It's not biological in any way, shape, or form. The American Psychiatric Association acknowledges that and realizes that. Mental condition in the DMS-IV. So that's first. Second, even more importantly, many people think that transgenderism is just sort of an extension of homosexuality, that if someone is homosexual long enough, then they'll, you know, the next step is to become transgender. And it's apples and oranges. In fact, and this is a shocker for most of your audience when they hear this, that the majority of transgenders are not homosexual, are not gay. They still are sexually turned on and attracted by the opposite biological sex. So if a man has injections and grows breasts, the majority of them are still turned on by looking at women, naked women. And so here you're taking a teenage adolescent in that situation, with that mindset, knowing full well that it's more likely than not he's turned on by looking at naked girls, and you're putting him in a locker room where girls are changing and showering, that is outright irresponsible. It's serious violation. So it's not like they're not turned on. They're turned on just like any other boy would be, and the fact that they think of themselves as being female is irrelevant to the visual violation that's taking place to that girl.
Not only that, I mean, I think that there's a right of conscience issue. I have a right not to put myself in a place where I would have to be exposed to that and not be the one, right, like up here in Washington that has to walk out of the room.
Right, right, exactly. You know, one of the most egregious parts of the film, The Holocaust, that I saw. It was a terrible, terrible movie. But was the fact that in one scene of it, it would show the women all had to strip down naked in front of the male guard when they went into the death chamber. Now, obviously, this is not, I'm not saying this is the same as death chamber or nothing like that. But the point is, we as a society saw that as very dehumanizing, very degrading and dehumanizing. The fact that they didn't even just have the decency to say have women guards so that they would not be still visually degraded and demeaned and violated, and yet what we would be outspoken of against Germany for doing in that terrible, terrible scenario, where somehow they have flipped it and saying it's now okay in a locker room for girls to have to compromise their values and their dignity in front of a boy that's more likely than not turned on by looking at her. So it is a serious violation of humanity, of human dignity, of privacy, of the free exercise of religion and conscience. And we need to treat it as such. It's a terrible civil rights violation.
This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio with my guest, Brad Dacus, Pacific Justice Institute, broadcasting live from the capital of Free Washington, Spokane Valley. Brad, if anybody wants to find out more, contact Pacific Justice Institute. I want to go ahead and have you plug it right now, because I know there's a lot of people that are saying, hey, that's happened to me at this school district at the local level, and I want to fight back. So if you could give the listeners your contact information and where they can find more information about Pacific Justice Institute.
Yeah. You bet. Also, if they'd like to get our free Legal Insider email every week, it's really good. That's also without charge. And they can go to our website if they want to become a part of our team at Pacific Justice. It's simply pji.org. P for Pacific, J for Justice, I for Institute, pji.org.
Perfect. pji.org. So, Brad, let's talk a little bit about, you know, what folks really can do. We've been working with some people at the local school district level to maybe change the policies, maybe offer a third option, a bathroom that could be for any gender, but, you know, the locker rooms stay segregated. Parents all over are putting in these notifications of reasonable expectation of privacy to the school district. What else can folks do to set themselves up to protect their kids that are going to government schools right now?
I think we mentioned earlier, they need to take advantage of the opt-out forms. If their children are in public schools, they need to go to our website, download the opt-out forms that deal both with the Common Core, some of the issues with Common Core, but even more importantly, some of the other issues dealing with sex education, right to privacy. And that's very important that parents download those, sign them, and send them to their school. If the school refuses them, then they need to send it to the school via certified mail. So now they're on legal notice that they received this, and if they decide not to respect it, then they're setting themselves up for litigation down the road. But that's very, very important. Parents need to also stay abreast of what's happening. You know, if my children are in public schools, I would definitely be signing up to receive things like our Legal Insider and other resources out there to not be naive as to what's happening. Public schools have become great places for indoctrination, not just education. And the studies show it unequivocally that our children are changing dramatically in terms of their worldview, their values, their morals, and their understandings of decency and the value of protecting decency. So those are some things that I think parents should need to do. They should also look at various educational options, too, if they can. You know, many I know are going to homeschooling or homeschooling consortiums through churches. Those are just some things that private schooling that they need to be looking at, or charter schooling even, as well.
Yeah, I really have started to advocate that. Go to private schools, go to charter schools, go to homeschool, do whatever you can. But right now it just seems like there really is no turning back in the government school system. It looks like they've crossed a line, especially here in Washington, where they're going to be teaching this to kindergartners next year, on top of allowing access to the bathrooms like we've been talking about, it just seems like there really isn't any reason to keep kids in government schools anymore. And I know that there are a lot of parents out there that can't afford it. I know there are a lot of parents out there that say, you know, hey, we got to be salt light in these schools. But, you know, it comes a point where it's going to be way more harmful to keep your children in this type of an environment than it is to find maybe some alternatives. What message would you, again, go ahead if you want to comment on that. And what message would you have to anybody that wants to go ahead and try and homeschool, where to go for any resources on that?
Yeah, HSLDA, Homeschool Legal Defense, as a part of, as one place to go for information. We defend homeschoolers ourselves without charge. They also link to a national homeschooling organization that you can become part of. And they have homeschooling conferences and conventions that are absolutely fantastic. I'm sure they have one for the state of Washington. They also have national ones where you get all kinds of curriculum programs, and incredible curriculum programs are available, easily available for people to use and take advantage of. And for those who are staying in public schools, I encourage them also to not just to be passive. My wife and I wrote a book called Reclaim Your School. And it talks about strategically how to impact public schools and including, for example, on the transgender issue, how to legally bring on an ex-transgender to come and share their story and about how they're no longer a transgender and why the lies they believed and what they did and what now they switched back. And things like that, I think, really help the discussion. All it takes sometimes is just an ounce of truth to annihilate tons of lies and deception, and that's just one classic example of and one easy way of doing that.
Absolutely. Well, I want to move on to something else that you've been bringing up on the Dacus Report. You do have your own radio show, and I want you to go ahead and mention that, the times and where people can find it. But you brought up this whole situation with baby Israel, and nobody that I know up here had even heard of it until you guys had reported on it. If you could talk a little bit about that situation and what's going on there.
Yeah, you bet. Baby Israel is just it's a terrible situation. He had serious brain damage after he had a serious asthma attack, and he was sustained, and his, you know, he was breathing and everything was, you know, functioning, and Kaiser Permanente Hospital in Roseville, California, decided that he was brain dead, and at least as they saw it, and they were going to pull the cord on baby Israel, pull the feeding tubes, and that'd be it. Well, and there are some times when some children are brain dead, and it's a terrible situation, and parents have to, you know, to make a terrible decision. You know, it's a hard decision, but this is a little different because you see, these parents, upon hearing this, they were felt very uneasy about it, because when the mother would talk, baby Israel would respond by movement and by touching her hand. And I mean, it wasn't the way a brain dead child is supposed to be, you know, verbally, as far as responsive to the mother's voice like that. And they actually have on video. We actually on our website have this case with the video of, you know, him being tickled and moving around, responding to the tickling. So they got two neurologist specialists in this area of brain analysis, and those two specialists concluded that, no, this child's not brain dead. So we at Pacific Justice Institute had to go into federal court to get a temporary restraining order to prevent the killing of baby Israel by Kaiser Permanente. We got the temporary injunction, but we couldn't get it extended, and we filed for an emergency appeal to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals granted our request and ruled that baby Israel should be allowed to live, and baby Israel was transferred to another hospital that has confirmed the existence of brain waves and is now treating the child and rehabbing the child, little baby Israel.
Wow, it's very rare in the law when you can actually save someone's life like that, and you guys did it. It's amazing.
Yeah,
wow.
It took a ton of work. Our attorneys were working late into the night on the weekends. We had a very short time frame because Kaiser Permanente was very dead set on on killing baby Israel. That was their resolve, and they were saying they had to do it because of the state definition of brain dead, which is itself too broad, definitely too broad. And so this child was saved, but make no mistake, with things like physician-assisted suicide, we see a shifting of the values in our society where life is being cheapened. If it's not, you know, quote-unquote quality life, then it's being cheapened. And life is life, and it's precious, and government should respect parents who wish to give their children all the hope that is out there.
Well, and I think that is a great segue to the issue of life in general and the idea that it begins at conception and ends only at natural death and should, and that the whole purpose of government is to protect life. And yet that's not happening. Up here in Washington, we came within two votes. Now, Washington State, I don't know if you know this, but we actually legalized abortion before Roe versus Wade, to our great shame in this state. We came within two votes of defunding abortion in Washington this year, and we're going to continue to push that. Where do you see it on the legal side of the fight? Where do you see the fight for life going forward on that side? We talk, I think, too often about the legislative side, but there's actually legal fights that are happening as well.
Yeah, right now, for example, we at the Pacific Justice Institute are challenging a new state law in California that requires pregnancy clinics, you know, crisis pregnancy clinics, to have a big sign advertising to women where they can get a low-cost or free abortion with a phone number where to call. But this isn't a pro-life ministry, nonprofit ministry, not receiving any government money. They're being told what they have to say, and it's horrific. And so we are arguing that now in the next couple weeks before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And we're going to take this to the Supreme Court. It's a free speech issue. It's a free exercise of religion issue. And it's very important that pro-life institutions not have to be forced via Planned Parenthood to give them business just simply because they're upset because more people are choosing life instead of killing their unborn. You know, that's what Planned Parenthood is known for. It's for pushing the killing of the unborn all the way up to the day before the baby's supposed to be born. They're for partial birth abortions. So that's what we're having to fight now on the legal side. And as far as the sanctity of human life, how it's working, we're actually seeing a lot of progress. You know, states are passing more and more laws in the correct direction, respecting life. The latest that's been, you know, is like 3 months. The point of viability, the point of feeling pain, these are things that legislatures are coming out with. The Supreme Court is going to be tested more and more. And if we have a good Supreme Court, that is, we have a president who appoints good judges on the Supreme Court, and I think we'll have a real clear selection this November in that regard, then but if we have a good Supreme Court, then we can see real progress in the ability for states to protect the unborn.
I think so. I think so as well. And it seems like that the tide of public opinion is very clearly shifting, especially now with advances in technology, that babies are viable now outside the womb at 22 weeks and even earlier, and that there's all of this visual technology where you can see that it is indeed a human being and not just some glob of tissue or something. And I really believe the next generation, anyway, I think they're turning pro-life, and I believe we have the opportunity to see abortion gone in the United States in our lifetime. And I really, boy, what a day that would be, huh? What a day.
Yeah, it really would, and it is definitely a possibility. I think at the very least, I think we're going to see it continue to drop. It's annually, it's dropping every year. The rate per capita of abortions has been dropping now for a number of years. And I think we're going to see it restricted and limited more and more in ways that are not only respectful for the unborn, but also respectful for women, not to be blindsided by Planned Parenthood propaganda and lies. You know, a woman goes in and says, oh, yeah, it's just a bunch of cells. Well, no, it's... You know, this little one's 6 weeks old, 8 weeks old, with little hands, little fingers. And Planned Parenthood is live, you know, all the time, because that's what, you know, that's their money. They make money off this. So as we require things like, for example, women to have full informed consent, you know, for them to know what they're doing, to see a three-dimensional mammogram, or excuse me, not mammogram, but a three-dimensional, like...
ultrasound and...
Yeah, thank you. Ultrasound of the unborn, things like that. I know we'll be more and more responsible, because I know that, I believe that most women out there, in fact, statistically, most women out there, once they're fully made aware of what it is that they're killing, choose not to kill. They choose life. And so I think we're making a lot of progress in that regard as well.
I completely agree with you. I think we are making a lot of progress, you know, and I also believe, too, that you know, some of the arguments of the body inside your body is not your body have really made some great headway, just logically, you know, with the next generation who I think is a little more libertarian, perhaps. So I'm really hopeful. I'm really, really hopeful on that issue, and I really appreciate all the work that you guys are doing to preserve life and the sanctity of life in all aspects, not just on the abortion issue. I want to shift gears a little bit to religious liberty, since that is a real hot topic. I gave a speech on the floor of the House of Representatives here about, well, 3 years ago when we were talking about the same-sex marriage debate, and I said, you know, there are going to be florists, and that was literally the first words that I said, florists, bakers that are going to be fined, potentially maybe even put in prison, who knows, for doing this. And that's what we're seeing right now. We're seeing them prosecuted, at least civilly, by our attorney general up here and facing very stiff fines and penalties. What is PJI doing in regards to religious liberty, number one? Number two, where do you see this going in the rest of the country? And where do you know, kind of the cutting edges, what should we be looking for here in the next years as this issue continues to come to the fore?
As far as religious freedom in general, I think it's what you're talking about, right?
Just religious liberty in general, you know, discriminate, you know, people are trying to run their bakery, trying to run their flower shop, you know, and
right,
we have
right.
an AG that's coming after them here.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to see more and more states addressing the issue. These decisions have been based on the state constitutions, not the federal. The Federal Religious Freedom Restoration Act doesn't apply to Supreme Court limited. It's only apply to federal actions, federal government. So when it comes to state law and the state discrimination statute, state constitution, that's to the purview of the state Supreme Court. Well, many states have adopted, you know, Religious Freedom Restoration Acts statutorily or amended their state constitutions. And then you've got state Supreme Courts, like you've seen in Washington, say, yeah, but that's beneath, those religious freedom is below civil rights. And since same-sex couples getting married, we call that, you know, sexual orientation discrimination, so therefore it trumps it. And the problem is they don't make a distinction between sexual orientation discrimination against individuals versus forcing someone to have to participate and support a ceremony that violates our faith. All these people that are sued, the bakers, the florists, the photographers, have all provided goods and services. They just did not want to provide something, though, that was going to be a part of a ceremony, a wedding ceremony, that violated their faith. And the courts have so far refused to make that distinction. I am hopeful that we will see different state Supreme Courts make that distinction, and eventually the United States Supreme Court choose to apply the First Amendment Free Exercise Clause to those situations. But without the right people in the Supreme Court, without you know, the right person being elected who respects that, and there's only one of two candidates running for president right now who I think we have a chance of having those kind of court nominees, without that, we're not going to make that progress. We also can hopefully, if we have the right person in the White House, see Congress successfully pass greater religious freedom expansion legislation, which is so important to those who truly value civil liberties in the classic sense.
Well, and that's where I want to dig down on that a little bit, drill down on it a little bit. So up here in Washington State, I've been practicing constitutional law almost 10 years now up here. It's very clear in our state constitution in Washington, Article 1, Section 11, there's an absolute freedom of conscience in all matters of religious sentiment. I mean, that's some of the strongest language in the country.
And then in Article 26, it said there should be perfect toleration of religious sentiment. And yet our Supreme Court seems to completely ignore that. How do we fix that? It seems almost hopeless.
You can, you know, try to amend the state Supreme, try to amend the Constitution again. But then again, you have the problem of activist judges like you presently have. And hopefully having them, replaced. And of course, you've got a huge political barrier to overcome to do that, I think, properly. It's the same way we do in the state of California. So it can be very problematic. But I think what's real important couching the issue is one of focusing on the fact that we're not talking about people being discriminated against or bigoted against or hated. What we're talking about is forcing individuals to compromise their deep religious faith and telling people that in order to live in this state, the state of Washington, you effectively cannot be a full practicing Bible-believing Christian and be a baker and make wedding cakes. You're illegal. It's not. Might as well wear your little gold cross patch, and so everyone can know. Because it's effectively making that kind of statement. It's giving no opportunity for accommodation at all for people who have not racist hatred or gender hatred or even sexual orientation hatred, but people who have sincere religious beliefs, simply wanting to be accommodated, and they're being thrust into a category of being bigoted and hate-filled. And when you talk to these people and you hear the defense, you understand that that's not the case at all.
You know, I've likened it to, I find it interesting, actually, this is irony, that during the Vietnam War, conscientious objection, the right not to participate in an activity based on sincerely held religious beliefs, was upheld by the left. I mean, this was a critical right, a human right. We had to have this. And now, when the shoe's on the other foot and I have a sincerely held religious belief, I don't want to participate in that activity, a same-sex wedding ceremony, for example, now suddenly I'm the one that is facing the wrath of government. I find that kind of startling in the logic there. And I know there are a lot of people out there that own businesses that say, well, you know, what do I do? I mean, what possibly can I do to help protect myself from being sued for exercising my conscience?
Yeah, and it's very problematic. And if people have specific situations, I encourage them to contact us at Pacific Justice Institute. We actually have a seminar called Faith in the Workplace, and it's all about the rights of business owners to be able to live their faith, practice their faith legally, with some defensive measures included. And if anyone would like to contact our office, we'd be happy to send them a complimentary copy of it. Or they can go to our website, actually, and look at it. It's part one and part two on our website at pji.org. But there is a whole plethora of things that businesses can do to live their faith, not hide their faith, but openly display their faith in manners that, of course, are in compliant with the rights of employees and respectful to the rights of employees. And as far as defensive measures, there's some of those that we talk about as well.
Well, Brad, if you could take a minute or so, and again, if listeners need help, they want to get in contact with PGI, maybe they want to sign up for the newsletter, and of course, maybe they want to listen to the Dacus Report, how can they get a hold of you and where can they go?
Yeah, if you want to listen to the Dacus Report, to our podcast, you can listen to that without charge on our website, PGI.org, PGI.org. They can also sign up to our Legal Insider Weekly Report. If you want to support our work, we're a nonprofit 501c3, so every bit of donations is tax deductible because we are a nonprofit 501c3 legal defense organization. We do our work completely without charge. So even most importantly, if there's anyone out there who need help, who need assistance on a whole host of issues dealing with religious freedom, parents' rights, they should never hesitate to contact us at Pacific Justice Institute. That's what we're about. And by God's grace, we'll continue doing our work to serve so many people, especially up in places like Washington, in Seattle and the like, where there is a tremendous amount of discrimination and bigotry and hostility oftentimes towards people of their faith, whether it's in school or in the workplace. We had a major win, by the way, in federal court in, I guess, in Everett School District, who wanted to permanently expel a student because he was sharing his faith during lunchtime. And we won that case, and so the state of Washington is definitely keeping us busy here at the Pacific Justice Institute.
Well, you're doing a great job, Brad. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio. And again, I'd love to have you on. Just keep us updated on some of these issues. And if there's any way that I can help you in the fight, please let me know.
Great. I really appreciate it. God bless, and keep it up. Thank you.
God bless, Brad. This is Matt Shea on Patriot Radio, broadcasting live from Spokane Valley. Brad Dacus of the Dacus Report, Pacific Justice Institute, PJI, pacificjustice.org. I've posted up online several links, including the notice of reasonable expectation of privacy and the opt-out forms for parents. They have a lot more, though. They have some great materials on what do you do if CPS knocks at the door? How do you handle it? They've got some other materials on there, as he mentioned as well, in regards to businesses and how to deal with the government, especially here in Washington, coming after you for you exercising your right of conscience. A great organization. Love everything that they're doing. Very accessible. Every time that I've called them, reached out to them, they've been very quick in responding to me. And I know they will be very quick in responding to you as well. And we got to work together to fight this stuff, folks. We really do. We got to work together to fight this stuff. And we can't let them have one single inch, not one inch, because they will not stop. We can't compromise. We can't take a step backward. We have got to fight and hold the line and do it, if for nothing else, for our kids and our grandkids so that they can live in peace and prosperity and freedom. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for joining me on Patriot Radio. God bless all of you, and may he make this generation the greatest one.